Genesis chapter 25 here, we see the birth of Jacob and Esau, but we have some more, we have some stuff before we get to that, here starting in the very first part of this chapter here. We know that in chapter 23, Sarah died, and then pretty much 3 years after that is when Isaac got married to Rebekah, but we're going to see Abraham's death, but we're going to see that he takes another wife. So in verse 1 there it says, "Then again Abraham took a wife, and her name was Keturah." So there's a Bible trivia question for you there. You know, what was Abraham's wife after Sarah? So we see that he has another wife after this, and he has a bunch of other sons that are after this. But you got to think about this, you know, he lived to 175, we're going to see in this chapter here, before he dies. And he outlived Sarah by 38 years. So she died at 127, which would make him 137 when she died. And so, but that's crazy to think about, okay, that he had all these children after when he was, you know, after 137. But anyway, that's beside the point. But we see here that the one thing I want you to see, because we're not going to get into the weeds with all this stuff as far as all the different people in here, but the one I want you to see is in verse 2 there. It says, "And she bare him Zimran, and Jokshan, and Medan, and Midian." Now, Midian is one that you should probably kind of remember as far as a place at least. And I believe that this Midian is where we get the land of Midian. And it's significant if you think about Moses. Okay, so go to Exodus chapter 2. Because this is the Midian is the land that he flees into when he flees out of Egypt. And he ends up taking a wife in Midian. And so this also shows you too, you know, we kind of covered this when we were talking about one blood, all nations, and how he had an Ethiopian woman they took for a wife. Apparently that was after his first wife, because his first wife is clearly from Midian and not from Ethiopia. So it's kind of like Abraham, he had, you know, Sarah, but then he had Hagar as a concubine, and then he had, we'll see other concubines apparently, just kind of mentioning in there, but I'm not getting into all the stuff about the concubines, but anyway, Midian, in Exodus chapter 2 and verse 15, it says, "Now when Pharaoh heard this thing, he sought to slay Moses, but Moses fled from the face of Pharaoh and dwelt in the land of Midian, and he sat down by a well. Now the priest of Midian had seven daughters, and they came and drew water and filled the troughs to water their father's flock. And the shepherds came and drove them away, but Moses stood up and helped them and watered their flock." So if you know the story, he fled, but then he helps them at the well there. Verse 18 says, "And when they came to Reuel, their father, he said, 'How is it that ye are come so soon today?' And so basically his daughters came to him." Now, what's interesting is that name, does that sound that familiar? You're probably thinking of Jethro. Now, Jethro is the same person. That's what we're going to see. Is Jethro is the priest of Midian. He's Moses' father-in-law, but his name is also Reuel, right? And you'll see this a lot of times in the Bible where you'll look in one passage, it says a name, and another passage says another name. It just means they have a couple names. And if you think about it, we all have a couple names, don't we? Most of us have middle names. So to say, you know, someone can't have a different name, or some people have surnames, right? You know, Simon, surname Peter. You know, Simon Peter. And so we have surnames. My last name is Robinson. That's my surname. And so it's not that out of the ordinary when you see that in the Bible, and you see one place he's called this and another place he's called this. You know, it's just he has more than one name. And most of us do anyway. So not a problem. But, you know, another Bible trivia question. What was Moses' father-in-law's name? What's his other name, right? But in verse 21 there, it says, "And Moses was content to dwell with the man, and he gave Moses Zipporah his daughter." So we see that the high priest of Midian, it gives him one of his daughters, and he had seven daughters, but he gave him Zipporah, and that's who he had two sons with, Eliezer and Gershom. But Exodus chapter 3 and verse 1, well, that's where we see the name that we're usually used to. It says, "Now Moses kept the flock of Jethro, his father-in-law, the priest of Midian." And it says, "And he led the flock to the backside of the desert and came to the mountain of God, even to Horeb." So that also tells us where the mountain of God's at, Horeb, all that stuff. But all that to say is that when you see these names, sometimes you can see where it came from. So you know what that tells me is that Zipporah is a long distance relative of Moses, because if they go back to Abraham, okay, so they're not that far out of the line as far as going. They go back to Abraham. It's just, you know, obviously Ishmaelites go back to Abraham, and all these other people come back to Abraham, Jokshan and Medan and all those. So, but they're obviously not of Sarah, so they're not of Isaac. But just wanted you to see that, you know, so when you're reading through Exodus and you see Midian, it's not like someone completely estranged from the group of people that we're dealing with. And so it's not that out of the ordinary that he'd marry someone from Midian. But Genesis chapter 25, verse 5, we see here that Abraham gave all that he had unto Isaac. Okay, so Isaac was the heir. And so that's what we saw with Hagar. Remember that he cast out the bondwoman and her son, because the son of the bondwoman shall not be heir with the son of the free woman, right? That we saw that in Galatians chapter 4. We saw that in Genesis as well. But here it says in verse 5, and Abraham gave all that he had unto Isaac, but unto the sons of the concubines, which Abraham had, Abraham gave gifts and sent them away from Isaac his son while he yet lived eastward unto the east country. So when he was still living, he sent all those sons away. He gave them gifts, but he gave all his inheritance to Isaac. Okay. Now, I'm not really getting into concubines tonight, but a concubine, a lot of times, you know, it's someone that's a wife, but they're of lesser status. Okay. So Hagar was considered a concubine, even though he married her. And even with Keturah, you know, he married her, but it wasn't like his wife, you know, like it wasn't like Sarah, okay? And if you want to think about it, Solomon had 700 wives, princesses, and 300 concubines. Notice how it puts princesses with the wives, and then the 300 concubines are not princesses. Okay, so they're I believe that he still married them, but there's a lesser... Now, obviously none of that's right, okay? I'm not defending concubines here, but a lot of times in the Bible, and sometimes a concubine could just be someone that is like a living girlfriend, so to speak, but sometimes they are married. It's just the fact that they're not a high-level status, okay? Sometimes they'll marry like a servant, right? And the Bible talks about that, how they'll marry a servant. And so it's not the same as marrying your first wife, so to speak. So... anyway, that's not a point of the sermon tonight. But we see that Abraham dies in this passage. Now, what we'll see here in verse 7, it's going to talk about Abraham dying, and it's going to talk about Ishmael dying. But again, it's giving us information. It doesn't mean that they, you know, Abraham died, then Ishmael died, and now we're talking about Jacob and Esau being born. Okay, it's not like that, okay? And throughout the book of Kings, you'll see that where someone dies, and then it will kind of go back and cover something that's going on, and it's like in so-and-so's like some year of reigning, and it's like, wait a minute, I thought they just died. Okay, well, it's because, you know, he's giving you all this information about the one person, and then switching to another person, giving you all this information up till they die. But it doesn't mean that that's the progression of, like, they died, then they're just starting off from when that person died, okay? And I'll explain that, because in verse 7 it says, and these are the days of the years of Abraham's life, which he lived in 115 years. And Abraham gave up the ghost and died in a good old age, an old man in full years, and was gathered to his people, and his sons, Isaac and Ishmael, buried him in the cave of Machpelah in the field of Ephron, the son of Zohar, the Hittite, which is before Mamre, the field which Abraham purchased of the sons of Heth. There was Abraham buried. We already covered that in Genesis chapter 23, as far as he bought that piece of land, that cave, for a burying place, and a lot of the patriarchs are going to be buried there. Now, what we see here is that he died when he was 175 years. So a score, and for anybody who doesn't know what a score, what it means, like when you say four score, three score, or you know, you think of Abraham Lincoln's speech, where he said 4 score and 7 years ago. Well, a score is 20, so 4 times 20 would give you 80, right? So 4 score and 7 would be 87 years ago, right? So obviously when he was giving that speech 87 years ago, he was talking about the Declaration of Independence and all that stuff. But, you know, when I was younger, when I'd hear that, I'm like, what in the world is he talking about? It's like someone just speaking like another language to you, right? But, so score, when it says he was 100, 3 score and 15 years, that means 3 score would be 60, add 15 to that, that gives you 75, add 100 to that, you get 175. So sometimes in the Bible, when you're reading the numbers, it's harder. Okay, they don't say numbers a lot of times like we would say it, right? Like we'd say 25, they say 5 and 20, right? And you're like, good night. And it, when we were going through this genealogy, I think it was Brother Luke that pointed out that I messed up one of them. But it's because they like say that it'll be like 4 and 30 or something like that, right? And I think I put 43 instead of 34, because obviously 4 and 30 is 34. And it's just like it messes with your mind. You got to literally think about that for a second. But anyway, he's 175. You know, so if Isaac was born when he was 100, how old was Isaac when Abraham died? You're like, it's Wednesday night. I didn't want to come here to do math. It's 75 years, right? So he's 75 years old when Abraham died. When we see in this passage, how old was Isaac when Jacob and Esau were born? He was 60 years old. That means that his boys were 15 years old when Abraham died. Okay, so we see him dying here, but he was there when they were born. Okay, so I just want you to see that. Sometimes you read over that and you don't really see it, and you think Abraham's already gone before Jacob and Esau are born. And when we get into Isaac, we're going to see that. I mean, he lives a long time. He lives 180. And it's interesting because, you know, the boys, he's like, you know, I don't know the day of my death. And it's like, well, it's like 100 years from now. No, it's not that far, but it's close. I mean, it's like, good night. That was a long ways away. You really misjudged that, Isaac, as far as when you're going to die. But anyway, so he was gathered to the same place that his wife was. So we see at the very beginning here in Genesis, we talk about with a burying, but being buried with your family, you know, you see it all the time where we have like, you know, my family has that where there's a place to where my grandfather's buried, where my dad's twin brother's buried, where my grandmother's buried. And so like kind of having a family burial spot. And when you go through the book of Kings and all that stuff, you'll say that they slept with their fathers. That's what it's talking about, right? Is they be buried with their fathers. So they're being buried where their father, their grandfather, their great-grandfather and all that stuff. So, but going back to Genesis 25 and verse 11, and a lot of this stuff is just self-explanatory, what we're seeing here, right? But we're going to get into Ishmael here. And so in verse 11 it says, "And it came to pass after the death of Abraham that God blessed his son Isaac, and Isaac dwelt by the well Lahai-roi." So we see here that God is blessing Isaac, and Abraham gave Isaac all that he had because he's the heir. But now we get into Ishmael, and if you remember, there was a promise in Genesis chapter 17 that he was going to have 12 princes. If you want to look back at that before we read what actually happens here. But in Genesis 17 and verse 20, and it says, "For as for Ishmael, I have heard thee. Behold, I have blessed him and will make him fruitful and will multiply him exceedingly. 12 princes shall he beget. I will make him a great nation. But my covenant will I establish with Isaac, which Sarah shall bear unto thee at this set time in the next year." So obviously this was before Isaac was born, but he was promising, you know, that Ishmael is going to be a great nation. He's going to have 12 princes. Well, this is where this comes true. So in verse 12 of Genesis 25, it says, "Now these are the generations of Ishmael, Abraham's son, whom Hagar the Egyptian, Sarah's handmaid, bare unto Abraham. And these are the names of the sons of Ishmael, by their names, according to their generations. The firstborn of Ishmael, Nebajoth." Yeah, good night. That's why I had Brother Eric read these, right? And it says, "And Kedar, and Adbeel, and Mibsam, and Mishma, and Duma, and Massa, and Hadar, and Tema, and Jader, and Naphish, and Kedema." So 12 of these. It says in verse 16, "These are the sons of Ishmael, and these are their names by their towns and by their castles. 12 princes according to their nations." So it's just interesting. They have castles. So apparently had castles way back then, right? So I don't know what that, you know, if that meant stone castles, you know, like you'd see in England or something like that. But anyway, 12 princes, isn't that what it was said in Genesis chapter 17? So God is another prophecy fulfilled. And that's what you see throughout the Bible. You see God's promising something, and then it comes true. God promises something, and it comes true. And so 12 princes, just like he said. And in verse 17 there, it says, "And these are the years of the life of Ishmael, 137 years. And he gave up the ghost and died, and was gathered unto his people. And they dwelt from Havilah unto Shur, that is before Egypt, as thou goest toward Assyria. And he died in the presence of all his brethren." So we see that Ishmael dies at 137. Isaac's going to outlive him by a lot. Now Isaac is obviously about 14 years younger than him, right? But even so, he lives to 180. So, but obviously Ishmael was alive when you know Jacob and Esau were there and all this other stuff. So again, we see, you know, Abraham died, Ishmael died, but they were here. When we get into the story about Rebekah conceiving and having children, they're all still alive. Okay. So that's just how the Bible reads a lot of times, is that it gives you all the information about one person up to their death, and then it starts over with another person up to their death. But obviously, you know, those things overlap if you're to look at it. So, but we see the birth of Jacob and Esau here in verse 19. It says, "And these are the generations of Isaac, Abraham's son. Abraham begat Isaac, and Isaac was 40 years old when he took Rebekah to wife, the daughter of Bethuel the Syrian, of Padan Aram, the sister of Laban the Syrian." Now, first of all, to see there is that both Bethuel and Laban were Syrians, okay? And so, just an idea as far as where did Abraham come from, right? Because Abraham, remember that Rebekah was sister to Laban, and her father was Bethuel, and so Rebekah came from Syria, and that was her grandfather, would have been Nahor, which was Abraham's brother, okay? And so you can see that connection with Syria, okay? And so this whole idea, you know, like people, they look at Syria today, and they look at Libya, and they look at all these other places, and it's like, they're like, "Oh, we're the Jews," and all this stuff. Where do you think you came from? You know what I mean? Like, you literally came from, you know, you think about where their lines go, back to Syria, back to the Chaldeans, back to, you know, you think of all those Middle Eastern countries like Syria, like Iraq, like Iran, you know, all that stuff. That's where Abraham even came out of, right? And so this whole idea of like, oh, you know, we have a certain bloodline or whatever, it's ludicrous anyway. And so I just want to point that type of stuff out. You know, people don't want to hear that, you know, like these Zionists don't want to hear that. They're like, "Abraham was a Hebrew." It's like, where did he come from, right? And anyway, so the birth here, we see in verse 21. So Isaac was 40 years old when he got married. So that tells us how old he was. You know, when we looked at that in chapter 24, it doesn't tell us how old he was, but right here it's telling us that. And in verse 21, it says, "And Isaac entreated the Lord for his wife, because she was barren. And the Lord was entreated of him, and Rebekah his wife conceived." Now, one thing I want to point out is that it says that he entreated her. You know how long that was? Well, it tells us when they're born that Isaac was 60 years old. So that's a good long time to be praying for, you know, to be barren. And so just any hope out there, ladies, you know, and I know a lot of, you know, everybody here has children, you know, that are ladies. But, you know, the thing is that I know people that have struggled with having children. And, you know, unless you're at the 20-year mark, you can't really look at it and say, no one's dealt with this before, right? That have gone to the extreme of using IVF. And I'm completely against IVF. I just want you to know that. I'm against every form of birth control. I'm against IVF. I'm against all that stuff. And I'm saying, if I'm saying that illiterately, you know, if it's, I think it's IVF, but basically, you know, the way that works is that you're going to have children that are going to die. And, you know, that's just the way that works, is they're fertilizing it, and it's there for a life, and they know most of those aren't going to make it. And so it's not right. But here's the thing. I know people that have done that and had children because they couldn't have children. They were struggling with that. And then after they had a bunch of children, they stopped using the IVF, and then they ended up having a child naturally. And then they started using birth control because they had too many children at that point. But the point I'm making there is the fact that, you know, don't give up on the fact that God's the one that opens and closes the womb. And here we see that Isaac entreated the Lord, and it was for 20 years. 20 years. Now, Isaac lived to 180, okay? But I still think we can use this as an example as far as waiting a long time to have children. And I know people, I have friends that still don't have children that have been wanting children, and they've been married for a long time, but not 20 years. And so just to have heart in that, you know, if anybody's struggling having children, I know people that want to have more children and still haven't. And, you know, that's the type of stuff that we just need to be praying to the Lord. And, you know, and I'm not judging any of those people that are struggling with that. It's not like I'm thinking, well, God's judgment's on you. Because obviously Isaac was blessed of God here. We saw that already, that God blessed Isaac. So it's not like, you know, Isaac was in sin or God was, you know, closing the womb because of his sin. This is actually a good example of someone that was righteous, doing everything they should be doing, but had to wait a really long time to be blessed with children. So just something to look to, okay? Now, as we go on here, she conceived. Verse 22, it says, "And the children struggled together within her, and she said, 'If it be so, why am I thus?' And she went to inquire of the Lord, and the Lord said unto her," now this is very important, okay, because there's a lot of false doctrine that comes up with this, okay, when we look at this in the New Testament, or even in Malachi, this is the answer. This is the answer to the question. I'm going to show you Romans chapter 9, but notice right here it says, "Two nations are in thy womb, and two manner of people shall be separated from thy bowels, and the one people shall be stronger than the other people, and the elder shall serve the younger." Now let me ask you a question here. I think you all know the answer. Did two nations of people come out of Rebecca? Like literally? No. She would not have survived that, okay? So we know that it was just Jacob and Esau that were born. But when he says the elder shall serve the younger, what's that talking about? Is that talking about the physical man Jacob and the physical man Esau? Well, unless you can prove to me that they were literally nations, right? That one person, and it says people, not person, right? So everything's plural there. Two nations, manner of people. And so when it says the elder shall serve the younger, it's talking about the nations that are going to come out of these two men. It's very important when we go to Romans chapter 9. And I know we've already covered this in our Romans series, but we're going to talk about it just for a second here. And we talked about it in Obadiah when we were talking about what it means when it says, "Jacob have I loved, but Esau have I hated." And that's what, when it says that, "Jacob have I loved, but Esau have I hated," it's pointing back to this passage here, okay? And this passage actually gives you a lot of clarity, because you're just reading Romans chapter 9. This is where the Calvinists come in and say, hey, you know, Esau was damned before he was even born. That's what Calvinists believe. But that's not what the Bible's teaching here, okay? In verse 10 of Romans chapter 9, it says, "And not only this, but when Rebekah also had conceived by one, even by our father Isaac, for the children being not yet born, neither having done any good or evil, that the purpose of God according to election might stand, not of works, but of him that calleth, it was said unto her, the elder shall serve the younger, as it is written, Jacob have I loved, but Esau have I hated." Now, if you're just to read this without knowing what it's calling back to in the story that we just read, you can look at this and say, that's interesting, meaning that he chose Jacob before he was born and he damned Esau before he was born. But that's not what's talked about here. Clearly, when you go back to the story, what are we talking about? Nations. And so what did he choose? What was chosen? You know, what was elected before they came out of the womb, before they did neither good or evil? The nations that Israel, that Edom would serve Israel, that Esau would serve Jacob as a nation, right? And we saw that dichotomy in Obadiah when we talked about, you know, Jacob have I loved, but Esau have I hated, when you're talking about the children of God and the children of the devil, right? And that's what we're picturing. That's a parallel that's being shown there. So we have the physical nations that are going to come out of these two men. We have Edom and we have Israel. And those two nations are obviously going to physically kind of show that, right? Because Israel is supposed to be the chosen people of God that are given the oracles of God, and they're supposed to be the light to the world, right? And Edom pictures the children of the devil and those that God hates, right? As a nation as a whole, right? But does that mean that everybody that came out of there, out of Edom, was a reprobate? No. Does that mean that everybody in Israel back in the Old Testament was saved? No, but it's what they represented. And as a whole, you know, in their time, that's what God wanted it to be. He wanted Israel to be that nation that he was going to use, that he blessed, that he loved. And obviously they missed the mark quite a few times throughout their history, right? But that's what this represents. So when we see the story of two nations in his womb, that's what it's talking about in the New Testament. When it says, Jacob have I loved, but Esau have I hated, he's talking about the nations. Not the people in general, okay? Because I believe Esau personally was a saved man. I believe he was a worldly saved man, right? But I believe he's a saved man that made a lot of mistakes, okay? And Jacob was a saved man as well. Just like Ishmael, right? God blessed Ishmael. We saw that in this chapter. But everybody wants to look at Ishmael like he's some reprobate, okay? But we do see how Ishmael is painted as unsaved people when we look at Galatians chapter 4, right? And Ishmael made mistakes, right? But God blessed him, and he blessed him with a great nation. And so the same thing with Esau is going to have a nation of Edom, but it's his descendants that are going to go into this, you know, these sins that they're talking about, or the fact that God's going to hate this nation, right? And Jacob the same way. And what we'll see, you know, when we get to Jacob and Esau, when they grow up and all the stuff that goes on with them, show me where Esau is serving Jacob. I'll show you a whole chapter where he calls Esau. He says, Jacob calls himself Esau's servant and bows down to him. Right? And he was afraid of him and all this stuff. I mean, so show me again where that lines up as the people, as the individuals. Okay? And so Jacob's going to make a lot of mistakes. Okay? And so if you wanted a Zionist type of interpretation of Genesis when we get into Jacob, you come to the wrong church, okay? Because what we're going to find out is that Jacob made a lot of mistakes. Now, Jacob ends up being very blessed in the end, and God chose Jacob to, you know, as far as the seed to go through him and all that stuff, but he made a lot of mistakes, just like Abraham made a lot of mistakes, just like Isaac made a lot of mistakes, but you know, that's the Bible. The Bible is we have a lot of great men of God that do a lot of great things, but they make a lot of mistakes during the time. And, you know, people try to lift up these men as if they're, like, infallible or something like that. And they'll look at Jacob and be like, oh, yeah, he should have stole that. You know, he should have deceived his father. You know, that was of God. It's like, what in the world are you talking about, you know? And so that's the type of stuff, and we're going to get into that. But, you know, right here at the end of the chapter, we see, we're getting into the birth here, but we're going to see something that Jacob does to his brother Esau, okay? And, you know, I don't believe it was right for him to do that, and I don't believe it was right for Esau to be such a baby either. So that's, you know, both of them are doing something wrong, and, you know, but anyway, in Genesis chapter 25, verse 24, it says, and when her days to be delivered were fulfilled, behold, there were twins in her womb. And the first came out red all over like an hairy garment. And they called his name Esau. And after that came his brother out, and his hand took hold on Esau's heel, and his name was called Jacob. And Isaac was 80 years old when she bare them. So there's where he was, 60 years old. And in verse 27 it says, and the boys grew, and Esau was a cunning hunter, a man of the field, and Jacob was a plain man dwelling in tents. And Isaac loved Esau because he did eat of his venison. But Rebekah loved Jacob. Okay, so first of all, we see some, what do their names mean? Now, it may be a little hard, you know, to see with Esau, but Esau, I believe, that name means like hairy or a hairy garment, okay? That's why, because a lot of times when you see in the Bible and throughout the Old Testament, they'll name somebody something and they'll say, why? Right? And so their names mean something. And so I believe Esau means like hairy or hairy garment or like a rough garment of some sort or something rough or hairy, you know. So he came out all red. So he was clearly a ginger, right? You know, that's why he has no soul. That's why he's a reprobate. No, I'm just kidding. but obviously that's not true. But he was, I guess he was a redhead. I mean, it says he was red. Now, unless that's just talking about his body, you know, because babies come out differently, right? They're pink, they're red, they're blue. You know, sometimes you think you're... or you gave birth to an alien or something like that. As long as they're breathing, I'm good. But, you know, but anyway, so it could have been just the fact that his body, you know, I don't think, you know, it could be that he had red hair, whatever. But it talks about with Jacob, it says that he took hold of Esau's heel, okay? And we'll get to Judah when Tamar gives birth to Perez and Zerah, or Zerah and Perez, however, you know, that's where there was a breach made, and that's why he was called Perez, right? And so we see why what Perez even means. And, you know, Jacob, what we're going to see is means to supplant. Now, if you think about that, it makes sense because he took his brother's heel. You know, like he was basically trying to supplant his brother because Esau came out first, so he was the firstborn twin, right? Now, if you go to Genesis chapter 27, this is after Jacob steals his birthright, takes his blessing, and Esau's kind of explaining what his name means, okay? And so it kind of fits, you know, when we look at what, you know, why they called him Jacob to begin with. But in Genesis chapter 27, verse 36, it says, and he said, is not he rightly named Jacob, for he hath supplanted me these two times? So I believe Jacob means to supplant, okay? And you can see that with the fact that he's trying to pull back his brother back in. He's trying to get out himself first, right? And so, you know, Jacob means to supplant. Now, what we'll find out in this chapter is Esau gets his new name. So both of them, Jacob and Esau, are going to be named by different names later on. And Esau is renamed in this chapter. And then we'll see that Jacob's going to get a new name from God. And you want Israel's name, okay? And so, but he sells his birthright. But the thing is that I want you to see here first is that Isaac loved Esau and Rebekah loved Jacob. And I believe that there's a lot of problems when parents, okay, us as parents have favorites, okay? It never turns out good when this happens. It doesn't happen good with Jacob and Esau. It doesn't happen good with Joseph and his brethren as far as having favorites and showing favoritism to your children, okay? And obviously, there's going to be children that you I don't want to say you like the things that they do more. And notice why Esau likes, or I'm sorry, why Isaac likes or loves Esau. Notice, first of all, it says that Esau was a cunning hunter, but Jacob was a plain man. Plain meaning like, you know, if you had like plain bread with nothing on it. You know what I mean? Like plain. Like there's nothing special if you think about that about him. And you can think about fathers that have children and they have that like all-star football son and then they have the other son that like isn't good at sports at all, right? That's what I think about here is you have Esau who's a very cunning hunter, man of the field, right? He's very talented. And Jacob's just kind of like, he doesn't have like these outgoing talents, right? You know, where he's just really gifted at doing something, right? And Isaac, I think, is looking at that. And obviously, apparently, he really likes his venison, okay? That's what it says. It says because he did eat of his venison, okay? So he really liked his son Esau because apparently he would always go out and get food for him and feed him venison, okay? So that's why he loved Esau. But Rebekah loved Jacob. Now, that's one thing that we need to look at, too, is that just because you have children, you know, that aren't, like, excelling in a lot of things, because you're going to have kids, you know, that are, you're going to have one that's a lot smarter than the other one, okay? And that picks up on things, but you're going to have, but the other one's going to be good at other things, okay? And so we just need to, you know, love them all. I believe personally in loving my children equally, okay? And the fact that you know, I may have more interests like in common with a certain child than another, right? Because I may have, like, you know, sons one day, and one son likes doing things that I like to do, and the other son likes doing other things, right? And so obviously I'm going to gravitate toward the toward the son that I, you know, like doing things with, right? But that doesn't mean that I should love that son or elevate that son above the other, okay? And so we just need to remember that as we're raising our children, that we don't always compare them to each other, okay? Because what we'll see is that Jacob's heart is a lot better than Esau's. Even though Jacob didn't have all these talents of hunting and all these skills that Esau had, you know, he obviously had a better heart as far as following God than Esau did. Jacob wasn't a fornicator. Jacob didn't give away his birthright for one morsel of meat, right? I'm going to show you here. And so, obviously, Rebekah was more so looking at Jacob's heart, and Isaac was more so looking at Esau's skills. Okay? And what does God look at? God looks at the heart. And also, Rebekah knows, if she gave birth and had, you know, God told her that the elder shall serve the younger. And so she kind of has this in the back of her mind that God has chosen Jacob for a great nation. And so, you know, you got to imagine, it doesn't really say that Jacob heard that. You know, maybe only Rebekah heard that from God as far as what was going on in her womb and everything. So something to think about, but it's definitely interesting. One thing I don't believe that Jacob was a weakling. Okay, people try to preach that where they say, well, Esau was this strong guy, and then, you know, Jacob was like this little weakling. Okay, that's going to not make any sense when we see how, you know, he moves the stone away for Rachel when she comes, and when he wrestles with the man all night long until he blesses him. I mean, I used to wrestle, okay? And anybody that's wrestling all night long, I don't want to mess with that guy, okay? I don't want to touch him with a 10-foot pole. You know, whatever he says, I'll do it, right? Because that takes a lot of strength, a lot of endurance, and he's not a weakling, okay? And so I don't believe that either one of them are weaklings, okay? I think they just have different traits. They have different things that they're good at. And Jacob, you know, was apparently, you know, as we see later on, Jacob has more of a heart to God and to follow God, whereas Esau doesn't. But Esau is very talented at what he does. And so you can definitely see how Isaac would look at that and like that. And so, but that's where you kind of see the beginning and the end there. You see where this problem comes between Jacob and Esau. But in verse 29 is where he sells his birthright to Jacob. So in Genesis 25, verse 29, it says, "And Jacob sawed pottage, and Esau came from the field, and he was faint. And Esau said to Jacob, feed me, I pray thee, with that same red pottage, for I am faint. Therefore was his name called Edom." So why is he called Edom? Because he's faint. So what does Edom mean? Faint. Now that's not a good name to have, okay? That's not like a good strong name, right? He went from being known as like a hairy man, you know, like a manly hairy man, you know, he definitely had hair on his legs, right? To faint. Right? And so that's not a good name to be called, you know, like to take that name upon yourself, right? And in verse 31, it says, "And Jacob said, sell me this day thy birthright. And Esau said, behold, I am at the point to die, and what profit shall this birthright do to me? And Jacob said, swear to me this day. And he sware unto him, and he sold his birthright unto Jacob. Then Jacob gave Esau bread and pottage of lentils, and he did eat and drink, and rose up and went his way. Thus Esau despised his birthright." Now, I see a problem here, first of all, in the fact that he gave up his birthright for lentils. Okay? I'm not a bean person, personally. And so, you know, if I'm giving up my birthright, you better have, like, a steak and potatoes in front of me. But no, obviously, what you got to think about with this, okay? When you're really hungry, what is food to you? It's basically very pleasurable for a very short period of time. I guarantee as soon as he ate that's why he despised his birthright. As soon as he ate that, he's like, what did I do? Right? And anytime, here's the thing, I get hangry, just like everybody else, okay? And, you know, I'm just like, I'm ready to eat, and I'm just like, I'm angry, I'm irritable, You know, and then as soon as I eat, I'm like, man, I feel like an idiot for being so irritable, right? You know, and being so like on edge. And I remember growing up, my dad would, you know, like I don't know what it was. I don't know if my blood sugar was always low or something like that, but I would just get, I'd get so like just not a nice person. And then my dad, he'd give me food or whatever. He'd be like, are you going to survive? That's what he'd say to me every single time. He's like, are you going to live? You know, and obviously it's a joke because, you know, it's ridiculous. Okay. It's like I hadn't eaten since lunch or something. And I'm like, just like crawling on the ground. You know, I'm just like, oh, I'm so hungry. I'm ready to eat my arm off, you know. And it's like, one meal? Really? You know? And so it's funny because my dad would say, he's like, you're going to survive? You're going to live? You know, and obviously he's saying it kind of backhandedly, but it was very truthful. But if you think about that, that's what Esau's saying here. He's like, I'm at the point of death. Now, do you think Esau would have really died? Do you think he had gone like 7 days without eating, right? Yay, 40 days without eating. And so obviously he's being dramatic. And so as anybody, you know, as I was as a child or, you know, and still get sometimes when it comes to being hungry. But all that to say is that that's you know, something that's only going to last a moment. But that birthright would have lasted his whole life. Now, and I didn't put this in my notes, and I don't know why I didn't put it in my notes, but in Hebrews chapter 12, it talks about Esau with this. And so, he's obviously not a good example here. This isn't something that we're supposed to look up to, like, hey, this is what you want to do. And starting there in verse 14, Hebrews chapter 12, verse 14, it says, follow peace with all men and holiness, without which no man shall see the Lord. Looking diligently, lest any man fail of the grace of God, lest any root of bitterness springing up trouble you, and thereby many be defiled. Lest there be any fornicator or profane person as Esau, who for one morsel of meat sold his birthright. For you know how that afterward, when he would have inherited the blessing, he was rejected, for he found no place of repentance, though he sought it carefully with tears. Now, this is talking about his birthright being sold, but obviously also into the blessing, which we haven't got to yet. And so that's why he said twice, two times, has he supplanted me? Because it's two things. So we see here, for one morsel of meat, he sold his birthright. Okay, so he's not a good example. Okay, and why is it linking fornication with that? Because fornication is something that is just a momentary pleasure that's you're going to completely regret the moment you do it. And so that's something that it's interesting how fornication is so linked to like eating food. And you think about junk food, you think about things you shouldn't eat and all that stuff, and how it's just this momentary pleasure. It's pleasurable for a season. And isn't all sin like that? But fornication is one of those where, you know, it's pleasurable for a season, but then the repercussions of that last you a lifetime. But, you know, with this, obviously when you're eating like a Twinkie or something like that, you know, it's not as extreme. You know, if you're like dieting and you like go off the train and you start eating like some junk food, it's not as bad as giving up your birthright, which is what Esau did. Okay, so for one morsel of bread, but it links that to it. Think about that. Fornication is linked to basically giving up your birthright for one morsel of meat. So stay pure until you're married. You know, it's something that the Bible says flee fornication. It's only pleasurable for a moment. You'll completely regret it, and you know it's not gonna be worth it. It's never worth it. And obviously, Esau would agree with you that it was not worth it for that one morsel of meat to lose his birthright. And so what does this birthright mean, okay? You may wonder, you know, have you ever read through the Bible and you're like, they're talking about a birthright, then they're talking about a blessing. You know, what does all this stuff mean when it's talking about that? Go to 1 Chronicles chapter 5. Because I was always kind of perplexed at this, okay? Because we know that Jacob is in the lineage of Jesus' lineage, right? And then we get into Joseph, where Jacob is blessing Joseph and giving him the blessing, but we know that Christ didn't come out of Joseph, right? And so that was always perplexing to me, you know, like, why is he blessing Joseph? It should be Judah, because he comes out of Judah. And so I'm going to first show you that there's a difference between the birthright and the genealogy. Okay, and First Chronicles, I told you to go to First Chronicles, right? Not First Corinthians. Okay, First Chronicles chapter 5 and verse 5, it explains this. Okay, and it says in First Chronicles chapter 5 and verse 1, it says, "Now the sons of Reuben, the firstborn of Israel, for he was the firstborn, but for as much as he defiled his father's bed, his birthright was given unto the sons of Joseph, the son of Israel." So you see the birthright was given to Joseph's sons instead of to Reuben. Went all the way down the line, all the way to Joseph, right? So that birthright passed all his brethren. Now obviously there's probably other reasons for the fact that they all sold him into... You think about it, Reuben was the only one that didn't sell him. The rest of his brethren sold him into Egypt, right? And obviously Benjamin's under him, you know, because he's younger, so he wouldn't be in the list anyway. But it says, and the genealogy is not to be reckoned after the birthright. So you see how those are separate? And notice what it says, for Judah prevailed over his brethren, and of him came the chief ruler, but the birthright was Joseph's. And so what's the birthright, though? So we see that there is a difference between a genealogy and the birthright. And Deuteronomy chapter 21, go to Deuteronomy chapter 21. So I believe that when we see this, the birthright, the blessing, and the genealogy are three different things. Because sometimes you'll look at the blessing and think that it's kind of linked with the birthright. Because I believe Joseph and his sons got the blessing. But I believe they also got the birthright. Okay? But what is the birthright? I meant to read this first, but I got... So, anyway, you'll get the point. But in Deuteronomy chapter 21, verse 15... It says, if a man have two wives, and one beloved and another hated, and they have borne him children, both the beloved and the hated, if the firstborn son be hers that was hated, then it shall be when he maketh his sons to inherit that which he hath, that he may not make the son of the beloved firstborn before the son of the hated, which is indeed the firstborn. But he shall acknowledge the son of the hated for the firstborn, by giving him a double portion of all that he hath. For he is the beginning of his strength, the right of the firstborn is his. So what is the birthright? Well, obviously it's pertaining to the firstborn. And obviously that can be taken away because it was with Reuben and what he did. But what is the right of the firstborn? It's a double portion. Okay, so both sons are getting something, even in this case where he has two wives, one's hated, one's loved, right? And he's basically saying it doesn't matter, whichever one's first, you know, then that's the person that should get the birthright. But it's a double portion of the inheritance, okay? So when Esau sold his birthright, what did he sell? A double portion of the inheritance from their father. The blessing, what you'll see, is something different. The blessing is just a blessing. He's not really saying you're getting my inheritance. He's just blessing him, like asking God to bless him and giving him authority. Okay? So there's a difference between the blessing and the birthright. There's also a difference between the genealogy. And so this is where people will get into the fact of, okay, well, Jacob, you know, he had to steal it, you know, because Isaac was going to give it that. He was going to give his blessing to Esau, right? There's no doubt that if he wouldn't have gone and done all the stuff that he was doing, he's going to give him the blessing. But, you know, obviously he supplanted his brother and he turned it around. But here's the thing. The genealogy, if you're looking at the blessing as far as being the genealogy of who the seed of Christ would come through, then you're putting it in the man's hands to make sure that's done right. Okay? The genealogy clearly goes through Jacob. And it wouldn't have mattered if Isaac would have given the blessing to Esau. That genealogy still would have went through Jacob. Because that's who he chose. And so, but go to Genesis chapter 49. This is the last thing I'm going to show you. Because we know it goes through Judah, even though Judah wasn't the firstborn, and Judah didn't receive the blessing. So he didn't get the birthright or the blessing, but we know that Christ is he's the line of the tribe of Judah, right? And so, and obviously who came out of Judah? David the king. So all throughout the New Testament, it's talking about how he's the son of David, the seed of David. And so that's all of Judah. And so, but Genesis chapter 49, when Jacob gives basically his account of all his sons and what they're going to do and all that stuff, he knows this to be true, that it's going to go through Judah. And so this is the genealogy of the Christ that was to come. And so that's interesting. Why did it say the genealogy is to be counted not of the birthright? It's, you know, they knew back then that what's the genealogy for, right? Usually when you're looking at genealogy, you're going backwards. You know what I mean? But they're looking at genealogy looking forward, and looking forward to the next generation, to the next generation, to the next generation. Why? Because they're looking for that seed, the Christ that should come. From the very foundation of the world, that seed would go down the line, and Judah was the one that was going to go through. So Genesis chapter 49, verse 8, it says, Judah, thou art he whom thy brethren shall praise. Thy hand shall be in the neck of thine enemies. Thy father's children shall bow down before thee. Judah is a lion's whelp. From the prey, my son, thou art gone up. He stooped down. He couched as a lion and as an old lion. Who shall rouse him up? The scepter shall not depart from Judah, nor a lawgiver from between his feet until Shiloh come, and unto him shall the gathering of the people be. Now, this is obviously a prophecy of Jesus Christ, and we're not going to read all of it, you know, as far as, you know, all the pictures of Christ in this. But we see this is very clear that Judah is who Christ is going to come through, and 1 Chronicles chapter 5 validates that the genealogy was to go through Judah, and not through Reuben, and not through Joseph. And so when you're reading through that, you'd be like, well, that kind of, why is Joseph being blessed through all this? Because the genealogy has nothing to do with the blessing or the birthright. Okay? So just some information as you're reading through here, and you're kind of wondering, well, that's, you know, Jacob had to do it. He had to do it, or Christ wouldn't have come through him. No, that's not what it's saying. And so there's a difference between the genealogy, there's a difference between the birthright, and there's a difference between the blessing. And obviously, it would have been cool to get all of them, right? You know, if you're Jacob, you know, you want all of that. And obviously, he stole two of them, right? But the genealogy wasn't something that you can steal, right? It's either God chose that the line to go through them or not. So, but let's end with a word of prayer. This is Genesis chapter 25, the birth of Esau and Jacob. Dear Heavenly Father, Lord, we thank you for today. And Lord, just pray that you be with us throughout the rest of the week as we go to work, but also as we go soul winning. And Lord, just pray for safe travels, especially if it's raining. And Lord, we love you and pray all this in Jesus Christ's name. Amen.